five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Paul, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Well, hello, 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 and welcome to episode 55 of Field Pass Hockey's American Hockey League podcast, The Holy Grail. This is the episode for February the 23rd, and we're here to give you a recap in AHL hockey for the past week. Now, on to our introductory question. I have to admit before we do that, though, So Zach Power, who is not here today, was in our script a little bit, and he just threw me off because in the middle of our little introductory paragraph, he just left a little, Zach was here, in there, and I almost read it, and yeah, it threw me off. So Zach, we're thinking of you today. Everything's good with him. Work schedule just got in the way, but anyway, so he threw me off already, and we're like a minute into the show, but anyway, guys, on to our introductory question. So we are in the beginning of what's basically going to be the last push for the Calder Cup playoffs. So which player from your B team is going to be the difference maker? And I'm not looking for, okay, the guy that's been tallying everything, you know, all season long. I'm looking for that guy that's kind of flying under the radar right now, but will still be a huge difference maker as your team jockeys for the playoffs.
Next. Not me.
Poor Andrew. Jesus.
Maybe if he was on one of my beats, they might have a shot, but other than that, I think I'm going to pass this one on to one of the guys over to my right here.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't even think about that.
Right out the gate, just like, hey, by the way.
Right. Normally I wait till the who's not section to start ripping on my beats, but here we're 2 minutes in.
Yeah, well, for me, I'm Corey Swartz, to reiterate. I cover the Hershey Bears. It's hard for me to pick one guy from this category because I was about to say, like, the entire top line. But if we're going more depth guys, I think, you know, I'm looking at the guys like, you know, Connor McMichael, Hendrix LaPierre, the couple of young kids there that Hershey has. I mean, obviously, we all know how great Ethan Frank is. He's an all-star. Mike Scarbosa is going to be talking about him a lot here, too. Mike Vecchione. Those have been the three big guys, right? But I always like looking at guys like, you know, McMichael, who's, you know, obviously highly touted in his own right as a, you know, former first rounder type of thing. But he's just the kind of guy, I said it when he was there during the pandemic season when, you know, obviously there was no playoffs to talk about. I could just picture this guy scoring a clutch goal. He's very capable of it. I'm really excited to see them have him in the fold for a stretch run type of thing and into the playoffs. Because I just picture, you know, us talking about him at some point with a big goal associated with it for sure.
And I'm Dina Weinheimer, currently covering the Cleveland Monsters while Jeremy is currently on a little leave of absence here. And, you know, there is no shortage of players that are currently just stepping up. I mean, the Monsters have been on a tear. They were on, I believe, either a 4 or 5 game win streak. Then it was interrupted for one game by those pesky Chicago Wolves. But, you know, like I said, there's no shortage of guys here that are stepping up and contributing right now, especially Owen Sillinger, Jake Christensen, of course, David Juracek, you know, Luoto. But I'm going to give my nod to forward Josh Dunn. He has, I mean, not to be cliche, put it up to another level, currently sitting fourth on the team in scoring. Yeah, the penalty minutes are something left to be desired, but he's getting those mainly because he's stepping up and protecting his teammates. He's developing into a nice all-around player that's making the guys around him significantly better. He is a difference maker.
And hey, everyone, I'm Zach Martin covering for the Charlotte Checkers. And for me, it's We would think, like, you know, Riley Nash, Lexi Heppodiemi, like, those guys have been on fire recently. Zach Dalby's been on it, too, for the most part. But for me, I'm actually going towards the Nets. It's the guy who keeps the pucks out of the net, tries to keep the teams in games. And for me, it's Matt Guzda. This guy is rookie season doing a phenomenal job. Goals against average of 2.58. Already got a shutout this year. It was his first ever career shutout. 13-5-2 is with the record, a 9-10 save percentage. I mean, and that's with him kind of splitting time with J.F. Berube over time, also split, you know, had Spencer Knight for a couple of games down here, even with Alex Lyon, you know, yelling back and forth. He's been kind of like the most steady, consistent guy for the Checkers this year. And I think if he keeps playing the way he is, you could definitely see a lot of more nods into the playoffs from Jordy Kinnear, because in this kid, like I said, rookie year, it's just absolutely amazing. So I would say Matt Guzda is probably the guy that might be an under-the-radar sneaky good for the Checkers for the playoffs. Just the way he's been playing this year is just phenomenal.
Solid picks all around, guys. But to go ahead and actually officially start the show, we do unfortunately have to start it on a bit of a somber note, as the hockey world has lost someone who has been around and made such a huge impact. But Corey has more details on that.
Yeah, it was a very somber note. Last Friday, it was announced that Paul Girard had passed away following a battle with cancer at age 57. As a Winnipeg native, Girard played 10 pro seasons as defenseman, including 153 games with the Hershey Bears. He also won the Calder Cup as a member of the Bears in 1997. Had a lengthy coaching career, serving as an assistant in Lowell from 1998 to 1999. Hershey, again, in 2003 and 2005, under the Paul Fixter era there, just before the Bears became affiliated with the Washington Capitals, believe it or not. Tail end of the Colorado days there, for sure. Iowa, Texas, and Utica in the AHL, as well as coaching Colorado, Dallas, and Calgary in the NHL. And he was in his fifth season as an assistant coach at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. He is survived by his wife, Cheryl, and daughters, Catherine and Megan. And on behalf of the entire FPH crew, we extend our condolences to his family, friends, and all those who cared for him. And a little bit of a nice tribute over the weekend, as the Bears were playing the Charlotte Checkers on the radio side there for Hershey. Zach Fish on the, you know, radio for the Bears got to pay a nice tribute to him. And fittingly enough, it was on a theme night for the Checkers that was Stick It to Cancer Night. So it was a remarkably lovely opportunity to have a tribute for him on the radio side there, for sure. And Zach did a great job, as he always does with those kinds of sensitive subjects, for sure.
And Corey summed it up nicely, you know, on behalf of, you know, everyone here at the Holy Grail, across the entire Field Pass Hockey Network, of course, extending all of our best wishes and condolences to all of those who were close to him. So moving on, we are going to talk about our elite prospect of the week. So, of course, towards the start of every single show, it is time for the AHL Elite Prospect of the Week. Many thanks to our partner, Elite Prospects, the world's leading hockey resource for league, team, and player data. You can check them out over at eliteprospects.com. So each week, we here at the Holy Grail select the AHL Elite Prospect of the Week, whether it's their on-ice play, some type of achievement, or something else that made them stand out. This is our pick for the top player in the last week in AHL hockey. This week, we are turning our sights to the North Division, to the Toronto Marlies, and Bobby McMahon, who notched his first AHL hat trick to power the Marlies to a split in their home and home series with the Rochester Americans. McMahon has 8 goals in 7 games since returning from recall to the Maple Leafs, 13 goals in his last 13 AHL contests overall. So congratulations to Bobby McMahon on such a milestone, which we'll be bringing up again later. I'm not going to put the tone on just yet, but of course, all data is courtesy of our partners at Elite Prospects. Now we're going to go ahead and take a look at the news recap of the week. And last week, gosh, it was filled with trades with AHL implications. But to get it started off, Friday, a three-way trade sent the hockey world into a bit of a frenzy, and Zach has the details.
Yes, so the Toronto Marlies have lost two key players in their on their team in the three-way trade involving NHL teams, which was the Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues. Mikhail Abramov and Adam Gaudette have been shipped to the Blues organization in a trade that saw Ryan O'Reilly and Noel Achari shipped to Toronto for the two Marlies and three draft picks.
Also on Saturday, the Chicago Wolves acquired forward Zach Senyshyn from the Utica Comets for those dreaded future considerations. Now, Senyshyn has recorded 6 goals and 3 assists in 37 games with Utica here in 22-23, which is his 6th pro season. And he was acquired by an AHL deal with the Comets on October 3rd of 2022.
Now, you know, trades last week. Another thing that last week will go down for is the number of milestones that happened last week. There were a lot of them, so we got to do it. So highlighting the AHL milestones this week are hat tricks, first wins, and a 4-goal performance.
I mean, do you like hat tricks? I mean, that's actually kind of silly. I mean, it's kind of a silly question. I mean, who doesn't love a hat trick? I mean, they're just absolutely amazing. Saturday was your day in the AHL. Syracuse Crunch rookie Lucas Edmonds, who had 3 goals in 27 games, recorded his first career hat trick, helping the Crunch snap a 5-game losing streak and an 8-5 win over the Utica Comets. We've already mentioned Bobby McMahon's hattie, but also netting a hat trick where Springfield's Martin Furk, all in the first period, by the way, and Rocco Grimaldi of the goals. Hat tricks upon hat tricks and just more hat tricks. So we heard you like hat tricks inside of your hat tricks, inside of your hat tricks, basically.
And then on Sunday, turning to the Bakersfield Condors, Raphael Lavoie had the first 4-goal game in the AHL this season and an 8-4 win over the Gulls. Of course, we have to mention Ty Tulio's hat trick again. So many more hat tricks, but, you know, Raphael Lavoie had to one-up it. You know, it's not that often that a hat trick gets overshadowed, but such a big milestone for the first, again, 4-goal game in the AHL this season.
Well, I heard you like hat tricks, but how would you like 2 hat tricks for the price of 1 in the same game?
Yes,
which
please.
Which is on Sunday between the Hartford Wolfpack and Lehigh Valley Fandoms. We had 2 hat tricks. If you're wearing the number 17, it was a good day for you. Let's just put it that way. Because Hartford's Gustav Radal broke a 17-game streak without scoring a goal. You know, again, another great number 17 there. He wears number 17 as well as the other gentleman that scored a hat trick in this game, Garrett Wilson. He scored. So Radal scored a hat trick. Garrett Wilson scored a hat trick. Neither of them have hit double-digit figures in goals this season. But if you were a fan of either team inside PPL Center on Sunday, you probably left without a hat in one form or another. So there's a lot of fans across the league who've been leaving without hats going into games here. Hopefully there are some good hat giveaways across the league to, you know, instantly have something to throw on the ice right now.
How many Hartford fans went and played the lottery with the number 17 on Sunday night?
You're a very, very... You know, I'd like to see you play the regular lottery to try to win some of the money that's going on there. If your odds were this good for this game, it's probably that good for the actual lottery, honestly.
Hey, pro tip, always bring a backup hat just in case you don't lose your good one. So
right.
Always bring your backup hat.
All right, that's enough hats for one episode if I do say so myself. We got in the Central, we're all about stopping pucks, not scoring them. And Texas's Remy Poirier earned his first career AHL win in a 33-save performance in a 3-2 overtime win over Milwaukee, which is no easy feat. If it was like Chicago or Grand Rapids or someone team that I cover, it's a little less impressive. But Milwaukee, congratulations to Poirier on that effort.
And kind of going away from stopping pucks, because gosh darn it, I want to talk about people who score goals, score those points. But Igor Sokolov has taken the lead for the highest scoring player in Belleville Senators history. Sokolov's 117th point is good for number one on the team that has been in the AHL since 2017. And you know what? That gets its own milestone alert. All right, now that we have most of the news covered, you know, we can't go over every little thing, but we get you all the big stuff. We're going to go ahead and move on into my favorite segment, Swipe Left and Swipe Right, where we share our hot takes from around the American Hockey League. And just like always, if we like what the person says, we're going to give it a swipe right. If we don't like what they say, we're going to give it a swipe left. If we really like what they have to say. And guys, we're running out of time on these super swipes. If you haven't used it, super swipe up. We go in alphabetical order. Andrew, you are first.
For sure. Now, my hot take comes from a passionate conversation that I had over on socials over this past weekend. And here in the AHL, you know, it can be especially difficult for a passionate fan base to see a product that's not really picking up a lot of W's and it's there at the bottom of the standings. And trust me, as I've mentioned before, I know a lot about this. Now, my hot take from this aside is that when you're consistently delivering NHL-ready prospects and a timely schedule and they're consistently making contributions at that level, you know, maybe kind of pump the brakes on calling for the coaching staff's head despite the record. I mean, I know that we all want to see the W's, but, you know, it's you kind of take things in perspective and realize that, you know, the player development takes such a precedence at this level. Obviously, the wins, you want to see them come with it, but sometimes, like I said, I think you just kind of need to pump the brakes a little bit there and look at the bigger picture over the season record. That's just kind of my take on it.
You know what? I'm going to go the adventurous route here and give you a super swipe on this one because it wasn't so long ago, and it feels like it's a long time ago now, that I had the same kind of discussion during the 2017-18 season when the Hershey Bears weren't so good, finished at the bottom of their division. A very rough year, to say the least. But I was among the few people that disagreed with the Capitals organization letting Troy Mann go at that time. That ended up being his last season in Hershey. And I kept saying, I'm like, you know, you look at the quality of players they had there. They had a sincere drop. They had promotions of players. Players lost in free agency, you name it. You know, the core was getting old, and they had, you know, just off of two decently length playoff runs type. There's a lot of factors that, you know, kind of didn't work in Hershey's favor that season. And they still let Troy Mann go, and it ended up working out fine because, you know, they ended up picking up Spencer Carberry from South Carolina. You know, all's well that ends well in a lot of ways there. But I was still against it at the time. And, you know, I do think that, you know, I agree wholeheartedly that at the AHL, you know, especially if you have a longer tenured coach, you know what you're getting there. And that should factor in rather than your team is bad, you know, therefore we need a new coach. You know, I can get the whole, you know, needing to start over in some circumstances that's the case. But, you know, for Hershey, it was just such a one season thing. That I felt like I was the only one. I felt crazy at the time for thinking that way in some ways, because it just, to me, it just felt like, you know, overkill to, you know, kick everybody to the curb and to seemingly start over. And of course, again, I was wrong. It worked out just fine. I have no complaints. Hindsight's 20/20, of course. But, you know, that was just my thought of it. So, you know, what you're saying there kind of echoed in my mind, you know, going back a few years for that too, certainly.
I'm going to kind of, I'm going to take a slightly different take on this, but I'm going to agree with Corey in you're getting your second super swipe here. You're 2 for 2, Andrew. I'm going to take it just because with Cleveland, I'm seeing it with the other side of a young coach. This is his first, you know, for Trent Vogelhuber, his first year as a head coach. And I saw some people getting really anxious, like, is he the best guy for the job? The ultimate purpose of the American Hockey League is a development league, not just for the players. We see it with officials. We definitely see it when it comes to coaches. Give these guys some time, some leeway. Like Andrew said, if they are consistently delivering prospects up to the NHL that are at least fitting in, even if they aren't, you know, making big contributions, but they fit in, they're not harming their team, they're doing well, that is a plus. May not be racking up all the goals, you know, or all the wins, I guess, for that matter. But they're keeping the prospects. How do I want to word this? They're developing the prospects well. So, yeah, my brain just died on me. I'm sorry. I'll go on to Zach.
Andrew, we talked about hat tricks earlier. Here's your hat trick, my friend. You get a third super swipe. So, I mean, look for the checker side of things. I mean, Jordy Kinnear is doing an amazing job. And I think, like what Dino was saying, it's like if the coach is doing a really good job with their prospects, I mean, you looked at the Panthers this year. They had a call up. They've, you know, Corey Denisenko multiple times. My brain absolutely just also just stopped out of nowhere. I mean, they had Chris Tierney. They've had Zach Dalpe. They've had Alex Lina for almost like 2 months. They had Matt Guzda up there. So, I mean, they had like at least like six guys from Charlotte up there at one point. It shows you like, yeah, they're hurting, but the guys they brought up and they were still doing their jobs and they're doing a decent job. But it's really it makes it interesting what the fact that like people want to be like, oh, let's get rid of a coach after one season, or you know, I would understand if it's like you're like season four with a guy and like nothing's getting better, then it makes sense. But with this league, it's about getting the guys ready for the next step. And you know, you can't control call-ups and injuries and everything else. You're at the mercy of the big club. And that's what I think with a lot of fans, they get upset. Like you see some, you know, HL affiliate fans get mad at the big club. Oh, you keep taking our guys. We want to go win titles and all that. Like winning titles is great in the American Hockey League. But at the same time, you have to understand it's like, but you're not the show though. You're just that next step to the big thing. So it's people have to have an understanding that like, this is what you sign up for when you're a fan of American Hockey League. You're a AAA team in an organization that ultimately their main goal as the big club is to win titles, and you might lose guys over time and you're going to lose coaches at some point. It is what it is. So I think it's just everyone just needs to just understand that that's life in the A.
Yeah, and selfishly, you know, you look at it from the same perspective of saying that, hey, that almost means you have to almost do a better job at an AHL level of, you know, utilizing AHL contracts and all that kind of good stuff, too. All right, so from my swipe right, I figured I'd build a strong profile that anybody would want to swipe right on, which is not something that usually happens to me on dating apps, just for the record here. So all the ladies want to swipe right on this one. Is it Spencer Knight, who's, you know, a goaltender, recent AHL grad? I saw this great picture of him on social media over the weekend that he's wearing a special mask from time he spent at a children's hospital. It features drawings from children he spent a day with, you know, that all across his mask. And I thought, I'm like, that's so wholesome. I love it. I thought it was so great. And I was, you know, looking around the league and, you know, another example that popped up was that Carter Hart from the Philadelphia Flyers, who, you know, played in not too long ago for the Lehigh Valley Phantoms before being promoted, you know, also had a similar-ish kind of specialty mask for the Flyers Charities Carnival that's coming up here for the Flyers in a couple of weeks, I think, if not even shorter time than that. But, you know, it's one that's coming up for auction. I loved the idea and the concept of specialty masks for goalies. Now, of course, you know, teams really only play, like, you know, a couple games with masks type of thing. You know, they tend to just kind of have one, you know, their lucky one. There's a picture of Spencer Knight's mask in all of its glory. I love it. I think it's just such a cool thing to have that reflects, you know, a perfect kind of thing there for, you know, for what he did there too, for sure. And, you know, means a lot to the kids there, I'm sure also. But, you know, my thinking is, you know, I don't know how the logistics works of, you know, purchasing a mask, you know, when goaltenders do that, but it'd be fantastic if they had like an auctionable mask for like specialty nights in the AHL sometimes where the goalies have been put on it. You know, maybe the organization has to shell out a little bit for it, but I'd love to see this whole trend of specialty masks become a thing in the AHL as well as more widespread in the NHL too.
I mean, I give that a swipe, right? I know logistically, I think takes like, anywhere between like 2 to 4 months in terms of getting massive. Because I mean, it all depends on the artist too and stuff like that. So I mean, how much detail goes into it. So I guess it would have to be like a off season. Hey, these are our specialty nights. Let's start, you know, getting some designs done and let our guys take over the however long it takes. So I agree with you completely. I think it would be an amazing idea. I just know that's like this is like it would have to be like well planned out, well, like in advance, just because of how long it just takes in terms of painting and getting everything taken care of. But no, swipe right. I'm all for it. Specialty mask would be amazing. You know, there's people who collect those that would just easily shell out money for charities to go get a specialty mask by name player here type thing. So All for it.
You know, Corey, I'm going to kick back one of those super swipes back your way because the AHL runs so much on these, you know, outreaches to the communities and everything. And you think of all the, you know, the school day games and everything that they do off the ice to involve the kids and get involved with the communities. I mean, I know like the Griffins and the Wolves themselves do so much for charities and children all around in the local area. So I can think of nothing better than getting them even more involved and getting the kids more involved. And like, could you imagine how psyched up some little kid in the Rosemont area would be to design a mask for Pyotr Kochetkov? Like, they'd be definitely jumping out of their shoes. Yeah, exactly. So I love this idea. Anything you can do more to get more engagement out of the community and get these kids involved and do it for a great cause. I mean, you've seen how successful all these auctions have been with these jerseys, and I think this could only bear more fruits in that area. So yeah, I'm going to give you another super swipe on that one.
If I had a super swipe, I would totally give it to Spencer Knight's mask because that is amazing. It's one of the better specialty masks that I've ever seen. Second of all, if you're watching on YouTube, I'm giving myself a massive swipe left. I'm not sure where those images of those Milwaukee Admirals jerseys came from. They are not on my computer anymore, but they just popped up and like, okay, whatever. So I give myself a swipe left, but Corey's take, swipe right, assuming that it's not. Because as you get further and further down the hockey leagues, of course, these guys are making way less money. So assuming it's not price prohibitive to the goalie, I would love to see it more often. So, all right, I guess it's time for mine. And really? Okay, mark that time.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay. All right, so now it's time for mine, and mine's a little bit visual. So the Cleveland Monsters have debuted their jerseys for the Outdoor Classic coming up here in the beginning of March, and we are going to have a special live broadcast of the Holy Grail from First Energy Stadium in Cleveland, Ohio. So stay tuned for more details on that. But guys, I want you to take a look at this. Here we have the Toledo Walleye, which is just on the other end of Lake Erie, their jerseys and the Cleveland Monsters jerseys for the Outdoor Classic. And my take here is this is 100% a case of, yeah, you can copy my homework, but don't make it obvious. And this is what they come up with.
I mean, for me, it would be like a hesitant swipe right because, I mean, the middle, like the monster head in the middle of the circle is kind of nice. It makes it very interesting, but I agree. Yeah, it's just kind of like a copy and like kind of change a little bit of things up. It's given me very, like they could have used this on Batman Night, honestly, in my opinion. Like these are just, it's like the Batman Night jerseys. It's just a different logo. Like what's the difference?
Look at that. It is Batman.
it's basically like if you ask Pam Beasley to give you two photos and find the difference, guess what? There is no difference. It's the exact same thing. Batman Knight and this, it's like the same jersey. It's just they just swapped a different logo, in my opinion. So I'll swipe right for you on that one. But yeah, it's just like kind of like it's the monster head. It makes the only thing that makes this look that nice. Everything else, it's like, oh, Yeah. It's just another Batman jersey with a Toledo Walleye feel to it.
Yeah, the color scheme is the same. The logo with the blue ring around it. Even the font looks similar. I mean, I just have to
it
look.
It is.
Yeah.
Is the number font the same, too? Because I haven't seen the numbers yet, but I'm assuming the way the C on the jersey.
The way the C and that 4 look. And the
it looks pretty close.
It's very close. I found a picture of one of the alternates for Toledo, like the top and, of course, one of the alternates for Cleveland. And the top of the A is different. One's kind of straight. One is more of like a separated block style, but has the same flourishes on the A. So it's very similar. Again, here, you can copy my homework, but don't make it obvious. Oh my gosh, you made it too obvious. What were you doing?
And the bad part is, like, they're not even the same organization either, I don't think. So, like, that just makes it even worse. Like, you stole another team's another team's look from another organization in the same state.
In the same state, they're on the same lake. Like, it's
That's brutal. Like, oh gosh. Yeah.
If you gave some kind of tribute to the lake on there, I mean, other than the monster head poking out, like, I see you're paying tribute to the walleye, but that's just a
bring back the Lake Erie monsters is all I have to say.
They might as well have just gone back with the lumberjack jerseys at that point. At least that would have been a nice throwback to a historic Cleveland hockey team. But yeah, no, this is like you had all these ones to play in the South, and this is what you give us. It's like the Detroit Red Wings reverse retro 1.0 practice jerseys. It's like you could have done so much better.
I have a hot take on hot takes compared to you guys, but like I don't see it. Like, I mean, like the circle, obviously, you know, that's similar, and you know, it's a shame that the font's kind of similar, but like I don't think it's as similar as it seems like to me. I mean, I'm obviously very biased. Blue's my favorite color, and so I kind of think that, you know, it gets the thumbs up from me for using a cool shade of blue like that. You know, front-facing Cleveland Monster is not nightmare fuel like front-facing Simpsons characters or anything like that. I think it's a pretty cool logo.
Or any facing logo of the current Rockford IceHogs. I mean,
do not bring up Hammy. No,
exactly
no.
That was going. I was gonna nix it.
No,
no. I'm sorry. It's just
Corey, like, don't talk about him.
He's always going to be talked about.
Shoulders are the big, like, that's the big difference for me in this scheme.
It's also the striping a little bit. The striping's a little bit different because it's more blocky. It's really blocky, but maybe the lacing is a little bit different, but still, it's just like it's too kind of close for me.
Look at this stitching, though. It's like they were going to go another color, and then they realized that was way too close, so they swapped it back out. Look at this. It's what there.
What do the numbers look like? Is my secondary question. Is that like you can't see it on his arms there? Like it kind of looks like they just kind of either photoshopped a C onto it or like. I think like half of it to me is like, you know, as long as the numbers and the fonting on the back look pretty good, like I think that would probably be what sells it for me in a sense. Cause I mean, we just came off of, there was a specialty night. It was like a Jurassic Park themed one for the Providence Bruins. And I saw the, you know, when they were playing Springfield on Friday, and the Springfield announcer kept saying, I couldn't read the numbers and the names on the back of the jersey. I think the way the simplified look, you know, especially on the shoulders, works for me is if it's easy to read the names and numbers on the back as a result.
Unfortunately, there have been no photos released that include numbers on sleeves or the back of the jersey.
Well, funny you mentioned that, Corey, because I remember going back to Batman night for the Monsters. Deanna, you're going to have to help me out. The guy who does the calls for the Monsters on the AHL TV.
That would be Tony Brown.
He was just struggle bussing all night trying to figure out the numbers because they were so like kind of close to the jersey color. He was having a rough time. So yeah, I have to see the numbers to see what it looks like as well. But yeah, no, like if the number color is too close to the jersey color, you're kind of just like throw your hands up and kind of guess who the guy is at that point.
But yeah, I feel weird. I swiped left on this one because like I think it looked fine. I'm like, you know, I'm not sure if I'd be 100% dying to cop one right away type of thing, but I think they look okay for a specialty jersey at least. You know, one night, two nights, I don't know.
Well, I am hearing rumors. This is 100% rumor. I haven't been able to, corroborate anything yet, but there is whispers that the Cavaliers and therefore the Monsters are owned by the same person. They share similar color schemes, that they're going to be moving away from the wine and gold and going to a blue and gold. And this is kind of the teaser to that. That is what I'm hearing. So maybe this is kind of a prelude to next season. We'll soon see.
As a Cavaliers fan, I absolutely say no to this. It's wine and gold has been wine and gold forever. And at that point, go to the blue and orange like they did in the 90s. No. I'm not here for it. I'm swiping left on that. So mine, I was going to talk about the jerseys. Deanna kind of stole my thunder on that one. So here's my kind of remix on – it's still involving the Cleveland Monsters, but here's my thing. I think I talked about the LaVal Rocket a few weeks back saying that they're going to do something and get their chance into the playoffs, but I'm kind of reversing it a little bit. The Cleveland Monsters are 7-3 in their last 10. They're only 2 points back of LaVal for the four spot. Here's my thing. I think the Monsters are going to shock the world and make the playoffs this year, despite the fact that everyone thought they were just going to be, they're going to be dead last in the division, but they're a little hot streak they've been on. I think Cleveland's going to do a little bit of a shock factor and maybe kind of slip into that North Division playoff spot.
I'll let you two go first, and then I will share my opinion.
I was planning to ride on your coattails on that one.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, it is what it is. I've seen enough air of my Monsters hockey between the Griffins and the Wolves to at least, I think, make an educated guess on this. And I think the Monsters have been very troubled by what's been going on above them. And it's been kind of pulling them down in a way. When I look ahead, I'm not completely sold on Rochester, LaVal, I think can squeeze on in there. I'm more looking at Utica, and they're in a free fall right now. They're and again, I've always kind of looked at goal differential, and I know Cleveland's isn't pretty, but I think that when it comes down to it, they got enough playmakers to squeeze in there. I don't know if Utica is going to be able to hold up. I mean, they're another team that's been kind of getting plucked away from their parent club there, whereas Laval's kind of they've managed to hang around enough. They get enough guys that can stay on that team and make enough plays. I don't see it in the Comets. I don't see it in the Amerks. I'm liking the Monsters. I'm up with that take. I think they can sneak in one of those spots there.
Guess who the Monsters play twice this week? The Utica Comets.
Utica has not been faring very well, and honestly, if you look at their they are tied with the Crunch, but it's a kind of a misnomer for the fact they've also played two more games than them. So I don't take that double 53 as they're right there in the thick of things. No, you just play two extra games and you're gonna fall back out of that tie real quick. So.
And I'll let Corey share his take before I go on my spiel.
Well, I'm kind of the least qualified to talk about these the monsters, right? I mean, like, the Atlantic, it's so frustrating to me that the Atlantic Division doesn't play the North Division just very much in general, so I don't really get a chance to look. But, I mean, look, I got to see them play in person two times in Hershey earlier, and, like, I do think that Cleveland's a better team than what they get credit for. Like you know, was said earlier that they've probably been one of the teams most afflicted by what their NHL team's been going through. And, you know, but just from what I saw there, there's some great resilience from the Monsters when they played the Bears. Obviously, they had that great comeback win over Hershey in a shootout, despite my feelings on shootouts in general right now. You know, it was still very impressive. They, you know, really didn't give up type of thing. So I do think they have, you know, a solid group of guys there. You know, obviously some what I would say is top-end talent to, you know, help them make that push. And to me, the North Division is just wide open enough that anything's really possible, you know, and that you could say that about with the expanded playoff format of anybody. And so, you know, you're down, but you're not out. And I don't think the Monsters are out second half of the season. I think they're going to be a tough team to play at the very least. And, you know, if they don't squeak into that one of those playoff spots, I'll be surprised.
Definitely 1-8 from what I said when I had to cover them, and that me and Deanna had to do that split wacky weekend way, and I'm like, oh, this team is not going to do anything. Surprise, surprise. I'm wrong.
So, Cleveland here, wow. I don't think any team benefited from the All-Star break more than the Monsters. I mean, so since December 1st, let's just give – I just want to kind of preface this. Since December 1st, this squad – went 11-16-4-0. It's the season seemed lost. This whole thing just seemed futile, whatever. Well, in the last 10 games, they have the best record in the North Division at 7-3-0-0. Like I said, they went on like a 4 or 5 game win streak, lost one to the Chicago Wolves, came back the very next night, beat them, getting back on that, getting a win streak started. You've got Trey Fix-Wolanski coming in. I mean, the season's not even done yet. He has over 50 points in a season, which, a little bit of trivia for you, that's only been done 3 times in the CBJ era. Any guess on who the other two were? Zach Dalpe and Mark Letestu, both in 2018-19. Yeah, TJ Tynan was not involved. That threw head coach Trent Vogelhuber, too. But this... I mean, Trent Vogelhuber said it best. I wish I could remember the exact quote right now, but he had talked about how this team, like, there's just a calmness to them. There's a confidence to them. This is the best they're playing, the best chemistry that they've had all season, and everything just seems to be going right for this team. They are only 4 points out of leapfrogging literally everybody that's below Toronto. That would put them up into second place. I mean, from sixth, it has to be a lock. They can't come back down, right? Right? Please? I hope I didn't just think this. If I did, sorry. Yeah, swipe right. Oh, gosh. Cleveland has to make it at this point.
What is such a 1-8 from what I said, like, what, not even 3 weeks ago, where I was just like, yeah, done and over with, and it's like, well, never mind. I'll just start eating crow now.
Yeah, my own a mind. Little bit of rest did the bodies good.
Trey Fix-Wolanski, like I said, when I was down there for that split series, like my series down there in Charlotte, like that kid was just all over the place. He is sneaky good. If people are still sleeping on him, which they shouldn't be, but
yeah, I mean, he especially this season has come a long way. A lot of his recent points have been assists, which just tells you he is focusing more on what he needs to do to make his teammates better and just overall help the team out, become a much better team player. That shows a lot of maturity on his side. So we're going to take a quick look because we do have some rerolls coming up this week in our Wheel of Fate. All right, so last time we checked in on this, Zach had made a move to reroll on Jonathan Berggren that had been out practically all season. And the Wheel of Fate smiled kindly upon our resident Canadian in giving him Alex Barré-Boulet. That singular move jumped him up to first place by a large margin. He leads our group with 1,000, that's a milestone alert, 1,019 and a quarter points. Trailing behind him, Corey is in second with 873.75. Andrew at 843.5. I'm in fourth at 836.25. Andrew, I'm right on your heels. I'm coming for you. And Jeremy is in fifth at 751.25. For those of you that haven't been here since, you know, the start of the season, this is kind of our take on AHL fantasy hockey, where we have our starting lineup. We have kind of a point scale for goals, assists, power, you know, specialty teams, points, shutouts, save, not save percentage, but like saves and wins and shots stopped and all that stuff. So that is the current standings. And I understand we have some rerolls. So I'm looking at definitely rerolling on a goalie. Andrew is looking at rerolling on a forward, maybe a goalie, and Corey, maybe a forward. How are we feeling about this, guys? Are you still wanting to tempt fate here?
Yeah, after Zach, I have to make a move here. I can't just wallow around in third spot. Something's got to happen with this squad.
At least you're playing. I'm just here for moral support.
Well, we appreciate the moral support.
Yay, go everybody. Woo!
All right, well, let me get this wheel all kind of set up here. All right. Yeah, okay, cool. So who would like to go first? Or are we just going to do ladies first and we'll just see the rules?
Go ahead. It's all you.
Okay. Come on, wheel.
Be don't nice put, to don't me. Don't put it in my hands, because I'm still getting mad at from last time.
Okay. So my goalie is going to come from the Colorado Eagles. Do we have anybody in Colorado? In goal.
Not in that, no.
Okay, let me pull up my goalie stats here. Jonas Johansson and Justus Onanen. So
it's really like a 1A, 1B you got going on there.
Right, right. Well, neither of them have a shutout. That's okay. Onanen's got more saves and more wins and more games played. This is really tough. I might go Johansson just because he's got the better goals against average and the better save percentage. But again, it's a 1A, 1B thing.
You got to figure if something happens up in Colorado, Onanen would be the guy. Maybe get the call. I don't know. It's
this one's difficult, but my gut's saying go with two J's are better than one. So instead of Justus Onanen, I'll go Jonas Johansson. So now that I've got that, it looks like the wheel is shining just a little bit favorably here. Who would like to go next?
I'll go. Sure.
Andrew, you want to go?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll go with O'Reilly first, and we'll see how confident I am feeling about my goalie.
Wilkes-Barre Scranton.
Oh, man. There's so many good guys to get from Wilkes-Barre Scranton.
Yeah. I want to say the obvious pick would be Alex Nylander, but I'm gonna ask Corey for his thoughts on it, because I know he's our resident Atlantic guy.
There's a trio of guys there, really. I mean, to me, I think Nylander seems to be the obvious one, but you couldn't go wrong with, you know, Filip Hallander or Valtteri Puustinen. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. those three guys are all kind of connecting together with each other. So, I mean, I would say that's probably a solid trio of guys if you're looking for a forward, for sure. I would say Puustinen.
Yeah. But I think my gut went with Nylander there, and I like Puustinen a lot. I've, you know, from the few games I have seen of Wilkes-Barre, he's always kind of popped out to me, but
he is a power play specialist too.
Yeah. But in Laval, Nylander's hands were some of the smoothest I saw in the whole game, and he was really impressive, especially in the shootout.
Oh, for sure.
Not that matters a whole lot here, but that sticks out in my mind.
Yeah, I've seen Wilkes-Barre play in person this year, and I would say Nylander was a royal thorn in the side of the Checkers.
Yeah,
in that game. So
I'm gonna stick with my gut, and I'm gonna go with Nylander.
All right, Corey, are you ready?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go on Alex Galchenyuk. I think it was a good experiment, but it hasn't. I think it's been harming my team a little bit more than it's been helping at this point. So we're going to see what we could do here, maybe to improve our fortunes here just a little bit.
And let's see if we can't get you in the Eastern Conference.
It'd be nice. I could actually maybe know something about someone I get. But
pretty much all of Corey's team is Western Conference. So we're taking him out of his comfort zone. So let's see here. Eastern. Hey, the Springfield Thunderbirds.
Oh, man. There's a couple of tough picks there, honestly.
Yep.
We haven't really picked from anybody from over there, have we?
I believe this is our first Thunderbird. Yeah.
Ah, nice.
Confirmed.
That's a tough one.
You got Marty Ferk.
I'd be down between Marty Ferk and Matthew Highmore for me.
I would go Ferk in my opinion. But that's just me.
It's hard to go against the 109-mile-an-hour slap shot.
I was supposed to say Matthew Highmore is one of the more consistent guys. I mean, you even have some depth picks in there, like Matthew Pekka, I think, is one. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you pick someone at this point, does their existing stats factor into this, or is it just everything they produce after this?
Yeah. Nope, it is everything that they have done up to this point in the season. So
okay, that totally changes it, because I may have gone with Pekka if he had the full season, but I think I'll go with Marty Ferk, just because I think the other problem with that is that Matthew Highmore is currently listed as inactive, and Marty Ferk is one of the few players in Springfield that St. Louis has not touched this season so far. So I think that kind of throws it over the edge there in my book.
It's really weird too for Martin Ferk. You look at his career, like he was with the Hurricanes at one point, he was with the Kings. It's just like whatever reason, like a lot of these teams don't give him a huge shot in the NHL, but he thrives in the AHL.
Yeah, it's one of those anomaly kind of picks for sure. But I'll also pick him because I was secretly hoping the Bears might have been in on him in the, you know, Marty Ferk sweepstakes over the summer that unfortunately the Thunderbirds won out on, it seems. So, you know, this just seems right to be able to put him under one of my teams here in some way, shape, or form.
All right. I'm sitting here. Do I roll for a goalie? Do I tempt fate?
Tempt the fate.
A2 Makaniemi is not doing it for me.
Get a goalie. Do it. Just do it. Do it.
Do it. No! Sammy, No.
They do have a good goalie, though, in San Diego.
Who?
Lucas Dostal.
Oh, true.
He's up right now, isn't he?
Is he?
Up there forever,
he is.
That's even worse then. Never mind.
No.
Wait, is he up because of an injury, or is he up because Anaheim is no one else?
Yes, the chaos that I bring thrives well on the Holy Grail. Yes,
I'm trying to look up like an Anaheim roster here for you real quick so you can know if it's like a long-term thing or...
Oh, man.
Right now, they
have Ole Eriksson Ek with a 5.13 goals against average and Gage Alexander, who has played a grand total of 2 games.
Oh,
You could pick Daniel Minella.
Oh my god. Okay, so for those of you who don't get the joke and you're on YouTube, take a look at Daniel Minella's thing here.
Okay.
Games played, 8 minutes and 55 seconds worth of game time, 6 goals against. That gives him per 60 a goals against average of 40.37 and a goals against or a save percentage of 5.38.
Go into his player profile though, because last year Daniel Minella was an emergency replacement there for the Chicago Wolves because they were just like literally picking up beer leaguers off the streets. And look at that. Yeah, he went from a goals against of 1.19 to over 40.
Look at his save percentage. His save percentage is 0.538.
I feel so bad for him, and that just tells you everything you need to know about the San Diego Gulls. So
just get the top guy for the goalies.
There we go. Reroll. I get Coachella Valley.
Wait, is that legal though?
Can
reroll. It costs a reroll, but she can do it.
I can do it. I had to.
So are you going to forgive me now for not giving you Coachella Valley last time?
This was the fates smiling on me and going, ha ha, we just wanted to see if you would actually do it, but we will reward you with Joey Decord. Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh.
Heart about stopped. Oh.
Think about the content we're going to have now just because of that.
Wait. I screwed this up.
Uh-oh. What?
Because I'm supposed to be looking at a forward right now. I already did my goalie with Jonas Johansson.
Oh, no.
This is okay.
Wait. Okay. If you're going with the forward, you got to pick out a – I'm going to call a –
Thank you, Andrew. You can still re-roll.
You've re-rolled on re-rolls. Jeremy re-rolled on re-rolls.
Yeah, but you're changing positions.
No goal.
It's gonna cost you that same re-roll though.
Well, yeah.
Okay. I was about to play some hardball on there, but I'll let it slide.
I totally screwed up, and I meant to go forward. I still was not going to pick a forward.
At first, I was going like full, like, this is going to break her heart, but
no, I've suffered.
Oh my
enough.
Gosh, Andrew, twice though. She's got Coachella Valley in both times. Nope, nice try though.
Almost. I tried to play her hard, but
okay.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. So, does anybody have Max McCormick? Please say no.
I think we got Cole Lind, we got Potts. But I think McCormick's out there.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to take Max McCormick for... Do I substitute Zach Dalpy or Fabian Lysel? I think I got to go Fabian.
Okay, I was going to say, don't you dare take Zach Dalpy out. Don't you dare.
I was going to say the opposite.
He's been on fire recently.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
So is Lysel, honestly.
Don't make me second guess this. Okay, I had Lysel in my head. Yeah, I'm sorry. He's going to rub this in my face just like Aaron does.
I mean, he's been quiet recently, but he just came – the last two games, he just came off of what I'm looking at the stat sheet, 7-game point streak.
Oh, geez. Just
– So, I mean, I don't think there's an easy choice there.
Trying to record an episode with a bit of a migraine and massive brain fog. This is what you get, y'all. I try to sweat, you know, select multiple goaltenders when we only have one, but I still end up with a board from Coachella Valley, so it's all good. Andrew, how are you feeling about the wheel? Did you want to roll one more time?
Yeah, you know what? Let's send it for the goalie. I'm not feeling good about having a goalie that's on a not playoff.
Please be the checkers. Please be the checkers for goalie.
Calgary.
The Providence Bruins.
Well, there you go. That's automatic. That's automatic.
Yeah.
That's not an easy choice, though, honestly. I mean, you obviously
They've had a platoon of guys in there.
I mean,
not going to get too many points.
I mean, it's a slam dunk. I mean, you're going to have a good goalie regardless. It's just who you go.
Yeah, but I'm not going to get a lot of – I almost wonder if I should go again because –
After they gave me a hard time for rerolling my reroll, he's gonna reroll his reroll again.
Yeah, but you switched positions though in the middle of double
because I misspoke.
I'm okay. So because
she said last time,
right? You have the what would be the obvious pick would be there with Brandon Bussey, but Providence is rolling with three goalies. They have Kyle Kayser, who's there at 7-1-2. They have Bussey, who's 15-2-4, and Kincaid, who's 8-7-4. I mean, none of those guys have played more than 21 games. For as much as Louis Domingue hasn't really been helping me a lot, at least I could say he's played 30 and is at least giving me opportunities to do something.
If you're re-rolling, I hope it's the Checkers just for funs. Just for funsies.
You're overthinking it, Andrew. You're overthinking it, man. The choice is obvious, and it's Brandon Bussey. They got a lot of goalies to pick from.
That's what I'm saying.
There's
that's
a statistical leap between the three goalies to bring. Yeah. So I mean, and
well, I'm hoping I'm gonna keep that re-roll, and I'm gonna hope that down the stretch that Providence is gonna be looking for points, and they're gonna be holding on the Bussey and the crease a little more. So let's make it happen.
Brandon Bussey from Providence. Yeah. All right. It is official. All right. Well,
man, I'm jealous. I'm jealous I can't be a part of this because this is just so awesome.
A lot of fun.
By the way, I have a pick down the line for a goaltender potentially, depending on if Samuel Ersson ever comes back. The answer, I think, is going to be no, but I'm going to throw it down the lane there for a little bit here after yesterday. See if maybe the Flyers surprised me a little bit. Yeah. But at the very least, I could say I was right about him. So, you know.
That's the good thing about this system is that you can kick the can down the road all the way to the last week of the season. You can go from last to first.
That's true. Exactly. Very fair point. Exactly. All right. So we're going to go ahead and kind of run through this. Who's hot and who's not? We're going to, once again, kind of look around the league. We all have our own little divisional assignments. And we're going to look at what's going good in that division, what's not going good. Corey's going to get us started off with the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, so I was a little surprised to learn this stat, but Hershey Bears forward Mike Scarbosa had 4 points in the last two games over this past weekend to give him an even 45 points in 45 games. At long last, a Bears player is in the top 20 in scoring in the American Hockey League. It's been overdue. But how good is it? He's on pace to top his career high of 65 points when he hit 30 goals in 75 games with the Bears his first year in 2018-19. That shocked me, but that just goes to show you how much of the MVP Scarbosa really is for the Bears. He's on that top line for a good reason. But as for not, I had to feel for goaltender Pat Nagel from the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Simply put, he was not very good in his last game against the Hartford Wolfpack with all those hat tricks we were talking about earlier. Just even looking at some of the replays, it was just rough. It was just very rough for him. He has 1 win in 9 games this season, 3.81 goals against average and a 0.877 save percentage. And to, you know, top off all of that, he was just swapped to the ECHL as of the day of recording for Nolan Meyer from the Reading Royals. So I feel for him. You know, I know that everyone likes to throw that tag former Olympian onto him type of thing. Feel for him, but that second, you know, third string goaltender from the Lehigh Valley's just struggled as a position. They haven't had that tandem of Ersson and Troy Grosnick that they suspected at all this season, really. So it's just been kind of a bit of a mess going back and forth for them.
Yeah, hopefully Sam Wisburn is not listening to this episode, Corey, because she might be in your DMs real soon with that take.
Very true. Very true. I was about to say, I think she talks him up a good bit here. So if I, you know, go to the Bears Phantoms game on Saturday and she's there, you know, threatening me a little bit, I'll know why.
Just a little bit. So for me, for my hot, it's kind of like a two-parter. So I got Lucas Edmonds became the first crunch rookie for Syracuse to record a hat trick since, I don't know, you might have heard of this guy possibly, Nikita Kucherov, I think is the name. He might be
sounds
okay from what?
Vaguely familiar.
He might be okay. I don't know. Who actually pulled it off back on October 12th of 2013. So have yourself a game there, Lucas Edmonds, as a rookie. And then we kind of talked about it earlier. Got to bring it up again because I kind of have to have some of my humble pie. But the Cleveland Monsters are on an absolute tear. I mean, 7-3 in their last 10. You know, Deanna said it earlier, they were on a pretty lengthy win streak. They're only 2 points back of the Vol. They're only like 4 back of Utica for third. I mean, right now it's just the Monsters camp. They're terrorizing the North Division right now, and that's just how it is. And then for my not is the Utica Comets. They are absolutely playing a miserable hockey right now. 0-4 in their current streak, 2-7-0-1 in their last 10. Technically, they are tied with Syracuse, but they have played 2 more games, so don't look at that as a very long type of thing. Their goal differential is a minus 10. I honestly think it's just going to get worse before it gets better for Utica. Laval might jump them. I think Cleveland's going to jump them. Utica's in trouble because they're playing Cleveland this week, and Cleveland's on a hot streak. You can see Utica falling. I can see them falling back to 6 after it's all said and done.
So let's move over into the Central. My hot pick's going to have to go to Manitoba's Axel Janssen Fjällby. I know Corey's heard that name quite a number of times. And then after perhaps a surprise waiver assignment and then his subsequent clearing of it, his appearance has really kind of given a whole new dynamic to the Manitoba Moose. And Janssen Fjällby has goals in 3 of his 4 Moose games. And if he keeps this up, I really don't think it's going to be long until he's wearing jet blue in that arena again. And as I go for my not, it's a team that I was a fan of, but it's going to have to be the Iowa Wild. You know, the feel-good story of the Wild has kind of hit a snag of late. They're 0-5-1-1 in their last 7 and have fallen 5 points behind the next closest team in Rockford. Their strength during their hot stretch was their goaltending. It just hasn't been there as of late. Zane McIntyre in particular is sporting an 8.17 save percentage over his last 3 games, while Jesper Wallstedt has given up 11 goals in his last 3. You know, it's not great, but with Grand Rapids 7 points off in the last playoff position in the Central, they could honestly sleepwalk through the rest of February and probably March and still be fine.
And finally, we're going to take a look at the Pacific Division. So I have a couple of individual players. First of all, in the hot is Ivan Prosvetov from the Tucson Roadrunners. Not a team that we normally talk a lot about, but Prosvetov has been a huge help in a team that has points in 7 straight games. Now, this weekend is where we saw him really pick up his stride again, backstopping 55-59 over the 2-game set against the Henderson Silver Knights, who absolutely outplayed them on the shot clock. And then looking in the not, unfortunately, Michael Hutchinson is going back to stereotypical bad Michael Hutchinson things, losing his last 6 starts, bringing him to a season total of 1-5-1. His last 2 starts, he's allowed 3 goals on 23 shots in each game for an 8.85 save percentage. And a bit of a lighthearted, whatever you want to call it, but Coachella Valley dropped back-to-back games in regulation for the first time all season on Saturday. And yeah, just a reminder, it's coming up on the end of February, just now losing back-to-back games. What a tear those guys are on. But we're going to go ahead and kind of look into, well, not really looking into the future yet. I'm jumping ahead just a little bit, but we're going to take a look at the divisional standings here real quick in our race for the Holy Grail. We're going to go back to the other end of the country, back to the Atlantic Division.
Sorry, don't mind me. I'm still just seething over the Capitals not claiming Axel Janssen Fjällby back. And I'm just a little bit still devastated. It was a free assignment to Hershey. They wouldn't have had to do anything. It was right there for the taking. That dimension could be the Bears right now, but I'm not bitter. I'm just depressed. But anyhow, the Atlantic Division is starting to become a car wreck again. Stop me if you've heard this one before. There's a pileup at the bottom of the division standings for the last playoff spot. Wilkes-Barre's at 49 points, Hartford at 51, Bridgeport in the last spot at 52, and Lehigh Valley at 55. That 5th spot is now attainable for somebody. Lehigh Valley, you know, the right combination of teams won and lost to keep that, you know, kind of within and together here. Springfield's 1 point above Lehigh Valley in 4th at 56. And then it's a little bit of a jump by 6 points to Charlotte in 3rd at 62, Hershey in 2nd at 69, and Providence in 1st at 70. So, you know, the Bears can, you know, just narrowly missed on evening up with 1 point there to, you know, possibly jump back into that top spot there. Who knows? But it's wide open. All the spots are wide open. It's far from a set, you know, set positioning there. You know, by virtue of the Bears taking 3 out of 4 points against Charlotte over the weekend, that really prevented that series from becoming more interesting for the second place there, as the difference is still 7 points. So I still think it's wide open. You know, there's teams like Wilkes-Barre that I think are just really underperforming right now. They've been obliterated by their NHL team in Pittsburgh there, really. So I really think if they get enough players back, or, you know, just some semblance of stability there, you're looking at a whole different standings board potentially when they start getting better here. So to me, I've been pumping their tires for a little while now. Eventually I'm going to have to maybe pump the brakes on it eventually, but I like what I see out of them. So they're well coached. You know, they have some of the pieces there. To me, it's just a matter of some sweet stability for them. So that's kind of my X factor here. But yeah, it's just kind of turning into that car wreck again, and you hate to see it. You wanted to see some, if you're one of those teams, one of those bottom spots, you were hoping that would change, and it hasn't.
I mean, Corey, I'm going to have to steal your shtick there a little bit, because the North Division, basically from second to about sixth place, it's all a car crash, basically. So seems like we have a little backup there on the North Division as well. I mean, you look at the Toronto Marlies are still way ahead. They're 20 points off on Syracuse, 6-3-1-0 in their last 10. I mean, at this point, it's just the Toronto Marlies are going to win the North Division. It's a done deal at this point, unless something catastrophic happens. Syracuse 5-4-1 in their last 10. They're also on a 2-game winning streak. They are tied with Utica, but that's going to change really soon, because we talked about it already. Utica's falling off really bad right now. Laval 1-0-1 on a current streak, 5-2-3 in the last 10. They're only 2 points back. The Air Mercs are only 1 point back of Laval. They're 3-6-1 in their last 10. Obviously, we're talking about the Cleveland Monsters. They've been on a roll as of late as well. So that's just another team to keep an eye on in a really close 3rd-6th part of the division. And then Belleville is kind of there. They are 4 points back at Cleveland, but 4-5-1 in the last 10. Not really going to do the job for them. So right now it's kind of like a 3-6 is really close. You would say 2, but like I said, Syracuse has got a couple games in hand. They're going to start pulling away from the rest of their group, but there's a lot of spots open up in that North Division, in that North Division pileup that we have copying the Atlantic Division.
Guys, I don't know if you know, but we have a new king in the Central Division. Riding a 6-0-1 streak, the Milwaukee Admirals have jumped ahead into the number one spot there. Now, Texas isn't going down without a fight. They actually remain tied in points with 64 apiece there. So it's not just Milwaukee's race just yet, but Manitoba, they're making some noise. They take the leap to number three with their own 6-game point streak there. Rockford and Iowa kind of continue to jostle away that 4 and 5 spot for playoff positioning. And I think we can kind of call them the playoff teams at this point, because, you know, it's, again, you got Grand Rapids and Chicago. I don't know how many times I can say that about the last two spots in this division. That's where they are. That's where they're chained to. They're not getting out of that basement. Shut the door, throw away the key.
Do we need a patented Holy Grail moment of Zen for Andrew? Just breathe in, hold, and release.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whenever we get to talking about the Central, at some point, it just, you can only go so far down the standings before you get to that stink where my beats are. And
from someone who's been, you know, either covering or closely following Cleveland all season, I get what that feels like. Now I'm finally getting a little bit of the other that you got to enjoy all of last season. So,
yeah, I was about to say, let's not act like Andrew didn't get to have all the fun last season here too. This is like, right? when your friend wins in Mario Party and the next game they're in last and they're like, oh man, I have it so rough. I'm all the way in last. All my stars got stolen in chance time or something, you know?
I'm not living in the past here, folks.
Gosh darn it, he's living in the present.
Can we give Corey a swipe right for the Mario Party reference?
Yes, absolutely. Always. Absolutely. All right. And we're going to look into the 10-team Pacific Division. Another team that's living in the present, the good old Calgary Wranglers. They are starting to pull away a little bit here with 74 points, but not, you know, too far ahead. Coachella Valley is in second with 68 points. And honestly, with the Pacific Division, the bulk of the race right now is going to be between 3, 4, and 5. So you got the Abbotsford Canucks, the Colorado Eagles, and the Ontario Reign. You know, Abbotsford, 62 points. Colorado Eagles in 50 games with 61 points. Ontario Reign in 49 games with the same amount of points. So, you know, just 1 point separating those two teams. Then here's where the break happens. We already talked about the Tucson Runners, Road Runners. They are in sixth place with 50 points. So they are 11 back of the fifth place Ontario Reign, 4-6-0, but on a 2-game win streak. So, you know, that's commendable. 2 points back from them are the Bakersfield Condors. Actually, they're starting to warm up a bit, going 7-2-0-1 in their last 10 on a 2-game win streak. Who knows? Maybe they'll start closing that gap with Ontario a little bit. Then the San Jose Barracuda, 46 points. Then you got Henderson Silver Knights way back with 37. And then the San Diego Gulls. There's a reason why I had the reaction that I did when I ruled San Diego, because they have won over 51 games, 14. They have lost 36, won in overtime. Good for 29 points and a 284 percentage. Has there ever been a team this bad? I don't know. It's hard.
Let's see. The Colorado Avalanche of whatever year it was in the NHL. So, yeah.
Okay. Fair. All right. Well, we're going to go ahead and look ahead into our game of the week picks.
Yeah. Well, I got three for you guys, one for each day of the weekend. Friday, I got Providence versus Charlotte. And I have Hershey versus Lehigh Valley on Saturday and Springfield versus Charlotte on Sunday. For Charlotte, they're starting like a 6-game road trip, I believe it is, through a bunch of these Atlantic teams, you know, Northern Atlantic teams by the look of it. And, you know, Hershey versus Lehigh, there's a lot of teams in there that I think it's measuring stick games for, right? Like, we've seen Springfield, they've been surging. They're playing a, you know, the team directly above them in the standings in Charlotte there on Sunday. That's a big one in my book. And for Charlotte, you know, they're matching up against Providence. Just like with Hershey this past weekend, those are two top dogs that are fighting for points. I have a hard time saying I want anybody to win other than I hope that it ends in regulation, honestly, from a Hershey perspective. So that way, you know, there's a minimum amount of points gained for both teams, truthfully. But, you know, that's going to be a tough one. And, you know, Hershey and Lehigh Valley has kind of struggled recently, but they're looking to kind of, you know, right the ship back to where they were of like a week or two ago when they were, you know, really hot. They beat Hershey 5-1 last time they met at Giant Center. To me, it's just a big game for both teams to try to, you know, for Hershey, you're looking to, you know, put those doubts that have been there to rest a little bit. And, you know, for Lehigh Valley, you're still trying to prove that you're legit. So it's a lot of teams in the Atlantic looking for a lot of big points in potential playoff previews.
I mean, for me, we've talked about this so much at length this episode. Why not bring it back one more time? It's got to be Utica against Cleveland. I mean, what else is there to say? Utica's on a free-for-all. The Monsters are terrorizing the North Division. They're super close to a playoff spot. Let's just see if Cleveland can keep their winning streak alive and just absolutely just put Utica out of their misery, get them out of the playoff spot. Let's see Cleveland start surging up the, you know, the divisions and just maybe find a way to put a little Calder Cup playoff flags in up there in Cleveland at the Fieldhouse. So that's my series to watch. It's really going to shape the North Division with those two teams facing off against each other.
And then the Central, the big one that I have circled is tonight and Saturday's matchup, Milwaukee at Manitoba. And I mean, you have two teams that are running absolute heaters right now. There can only be one king of the Heartland, and this 2-game series in the Great White North, it looks to be an absolute banger, and it's going to have it all. It's going to have big goals. It's going to have some great goaltending. It's one series I have circled up, and it's this one.
In the Pacific, give me the Friday and Saturday series between the third in the Pacific Abbotsford Canucks and the fourth place Colorado Eagles. This is, I mean, a little mini series that could potentially be a preview of a playoff series come, you know, this time in whatever the schedule is, March, April. But as of recording on the 21st, again, only one point stands between these two teams. Both teams desperate to win right now, as the Pacific is in a bit of a race, not necessarily for, you know, the Calder Cup playoffs. That's kind of, if you look at it, already been set. Right now, they are jockeying for prime positions here. This is going to be a huge series. Please go watch it.
Well, speaking of things you can go and watch this this weekend, we have some AHL free action on AHL TV as the Belleville Senators are making their way through Pennsylvania to take on the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins at Mohegan Sun Arena. 6 o'clock p.m. puck drop. Two teams that are hungry for points to stay in the playoff race. And it should prove to be an interesting matchup, a fascinating one with two teams that, you know, Wilkes-Barre, they're kind of in similar footing, right? They're trying to, you know, really battle to just be in the conversation for it still at this point. So it's two big points. I know Belleville's going to Hershey after that game, so should prove to be an interesting set of games for them for sure.
Also, we have live AHL action on the Field Pass Hockey app. As the Charlotte Checkers play three games this week on Friday, February 14th, they are starting their six-game road trip, like Corey said, in Providence at 7.05 p.m. Eastern on Friday night. Then the next day on Saturday, they're going to Bridgeport to play the Islanders at 7 p.m. Eastern. And then the next day, they get to travel to Springfield to play the Thunderbirds at 3.05 p.m. Eastern. You can download that on the Google Play Store and the App Store to listen to all live Checkers games on there. That's not a fun road trip.
I had to give you all the Zach Power stuff. You got the ka-ching, you know, he gets paid by the click. We're going to give that to him. You know, got the 05. We're not doing this. We are doing this for the nice round start. Yeah. It's Zach, you're here in spirit.
I mean, you know what? One Zach to a Vell, Zach will take it. But honestly, though, what kind of scheduling is that to have three different teams, three different nights back to back to back, and then the following week, they do it all over again, the same thing? It's just like, way to go on the scheduling, guys.
Welcome to the AHL.
Oh, it's so great.
All right, we're going to finish off this episode with the bonus round. And Corey is back in the driver's seat once again, which tells me, I'm wondering, is this going to be either Nathan Walker or Hershey inspired? Or are you going to throw a curveball at us?
It's all Hershey, baby, all the time here.
All right. All
on
right.
My bonus rounds. So this season is the 85th anniversary of the Hershey Bears, but it's also the anniversary season of their inaugural year at Giant Center. So I decided to split this up since not everybody knows the wealth of Bears knowledge that I have. I was going to ask you guys something about the original days of Hershey Bears hockey. But so I have hit one of these right and you'll win type of thing. What was the name of Hershey's original arena, which is back before, it actually predates the Bears, before their official inauguration? A, B, what year did the Giant Center open? And C, if you know all that, what was the first event that was held at Giant Center? It wasn't the Bears.
I'm passing all three. I'm not even guessing.
And you can take guesses on the year. That's why I left the year in there, is because it's one that you can take some bear swipes at.
Was it Hershey Park Arena?
It was not. Hershey Park Arena was their official first home, but they have an arena that predates the arena that the Hershey Park Arena is actually attached to, side by side.
Where did they play? The Coliseum?
It's very similar name to that, but not quite.
It's a little too old.
I was about to say, one's a little, they don't use this kind of, it's a name they don't use for arenas anymore. something a little more regal sounding, actually.
What Hershey Sentra?
Not the, well, the Forum is definitely. I'm gonna skip over that one.
Hold on, let me see if I can't get a picture I can share to the class on this one. It's odd because, like, I've never actually been in this building before, believe it or not, but it's, like, it's attached to the Hershey Park Arena. It only seats 1,800 people for hockey. And that's part of the reason why it wasn't, you know, obviously didn't stick around for too long.
It's not something like,
here's your picture. Your picture of the facility from my phone. Like, that name is not accurate.
I'm just thinking regal. I'm thinking royalty. Like,
right, I'm thinking like the courtyard or something.
Like, you're thinking something
palace.
Yeah, I was about to say you're in the ballpark there. That's actually exactly like half of the name.
Hershey Palace.
Not quite. It's the Hershey Ice Palace. Believe it or not, so the Hershey lore, as it is for this one, is that Milton Hershey had this team in the Ice Palace, and it was so popular. Obviously, 1,800 people is not what we would consider super popular by today's standards, of course, but it was so hard to get tickets for this that Milton Hershey himself was actually edged out of being able to go see his own team play.
Oh.
That's the rumor on it, and that's what caused him to, you know, get with his staff to, you know, initiate construction on what would become the Hershey Park Arena. So we'll drop it to the secondary question. What do you think the year was that Giant Center opened, and what was the first event that headlined Giant Center? It wasn't the Bears.
2003.
Any other takers?
2011.
It's an anniversary this year, too.
Okay, would that be 2002?
Dina has this one. It was the 2002-2003 season was the inaugural Giant Center season. So we are officially celebrating 20 years of the Giant Center, which is very hard for me to believe.
That's what I was okay, I'll concede it to Dina. I was like, I was like, wait a minute, 20 years.
Any guesses on the first event?
It had to be either
an AC/DC concert.
I was going to say a concert of some kind, either a concert or a circus.
It was a concert.
2002. Who was touring in 2002? Like,
it's would an it be, unlikely one.
It's an unlikely one.
Would it be
a
like
a little unlikely? Like at least compared to what they do now.
Or Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Country's a good guess because they do. They featured tons of country artists between Hershey Park Stadium and Giant Center, but it's actually not country. Believe it or not,
was it Korn?
Nope.
That's so out of left field.
Is the artist still alive today?
Yeah, I believe so. Yes.
So we're talking old.
Not literally old.
Billy Joel,
like Paul McCartney or something? I don't know.
Nope. It's more low. No, it's not low. I'll say it's looking. I'm not very musically inclined. Let me just put it this way: like I know very little about music. But Cher was the first performer.
Oh, I love Cher.
Ever
low key, yeah.
At Giant Center,
Cher's not low key, and yes, she is quite old. I think she's in like her 70s. She's 76.
Damn.
I believe that, but yeah, Cher was the first ever event held at Giant Center, just a couple of weeks before Hershey's inaugural season kicked off at Giant Center.
All right. Well, what, you know, awesome bonus round once again. I have learned more about everything Hershey Bears this season than I ever thought I was going to. But all right. Well, guys, that's going to be it for the Holy Grail this week. If you would like to see or hear more of us, and Zach Power put another note in here that he was here as well. But yeah, if you want to see or hear more of us, please subscribe to us on YouTube. We have our own channel. Just type in The Holy Grail, G-R-A-H-L, and you'll find us. And of course, wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, we're there too. Also give us a follow on Twitter at The Holy Grail. And also check out all of Field Pass Hockey's other podcasts featuring Matthew Harding and Jason Mouse as they break down the ECHL's Wichita Thunder and chat with some of the team's legendary players on the Rolling Thunder podcast, airing bi-weekly on Field Pass Hockey, and also Syracuse Speaks with Alexander Ackerman, which, of course, is all about the Syracuse Crunch. On behalf of Zach Martin and Corey Swartz and Andrew Rinaldi, and I'm sure Zach Power as well, just on behalf of all of us here at the Holy Grail, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you have an amazing week, and we'll catch you next Thursday. Bye.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or a topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.